The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clare for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clare.
And I'm Stan Clare, and welcome to the HOD Hour, the Hebrew Order of David, 115 years of service to the community, a Jewish fraternity based in South Africa with lodges in the United Kingdom, United States, Canada, and Israel, as well as throughout South Africa. Tonight we're going to be talking about something which I think is close to a lot of people today. It's deoxyribonucleic acid, short DNA, the molecule of life. And I suppose most people are familiar with it. If you've watched crime movies, et cetera, you'll be thinking, well, DNA is connected to all of that, and that's how they solve crimes. This is now become part of the scene as far as people in genealogy are concerned, especially Jews. They like to go and trace their ancestors, but it's all what it seems to be. So we have as our guest tonight, two people. Firstly, Samuel Burke, an Emmy award-winning bilingual and technology journalist who anchored in the United Kingdom, but previously produced CNN shows and worked on CNN. He's reported the scenes of major world events such as the Manchester Ariana Grande concert bombing, the Grenfell Tower residential fire, as well as the United Kingdom Parliament and London Bridge terrorist attacks. Currently, he's developing a TV series and authoring a book on how unexpected DNA tests are rewriting people's lives. Welcome, Samuel.
Stan, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your program.
No, it's an honor to have you on the program. And I've got with me in the studio Natalie Solomon. For some odd reason, she decided she wanted to be my producer, and she's joined us. It's a fraternity, but we're allowing her in the door because she's doing sterling work, and she's been your contact to bring you onto the show. And so thanks, Natalie. Natalie is a clinical psychologist working at a remedial school in Johannesburg. That's her part-time job. Now she's a full-time producer for the HOD Hour.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So, Samuel, this DNA testing is throwing up some things that people really don't want to hear in some cases. I know that if you go back to in South Africa, Lithuanian Jews came here and all of them claimed to have ancestors who were Rabbonim. Some of them are not going to tell you that their ancestors were cattle thieves, but you know, that probably will come out in the DNA, and it has come out in the DNA in some instances. So tell us about your work and why you gave up a lucrative situation with CNN and have moved into on your own to produce this TV series and a book on unexpected DNA test results.
Well, I think a big part of it has to do with my Jewish background, because we are so connected with our immediate history as well as the long-term history that we all know about growing up, going to Hebrew school. And so I've always had a reverence for this history and my family's own history. And that was the reason that we took a DNA test. I wanted to know specifically more about my mom's Sephardic side. My mom's side are Sephardic German Jews. And of course, when you think of Sephardic Jews, you don't think of Germany. And so we weren't clear exactly how they were Sephardic Jews. And we took a DNA test and that confirmed that for us. The Jews in her family had gone from Spain to Portugal and then to Germany. But we also had an unexpected DNA result along the way. Growing up, I had long heard about a cousin that my father had who they assumed was gay, but they didn't know that. And he disappeared in 1986 was the last time my family heard from him. And my family later into the 90s assumed that he had died from AIDS. Why would somebody who they had known their whole lives suddenly disappeared from the family? No return calls, No letters were returned. Anything that was sent to his last address was sent back. He was missing for 30 some odd years. And then my dad took the DNA test. And then cousin Jerry appeared. He was the very first person that appeared in my dad's DNA results. And from that, I got to know him and find out why he had disappeared, where he had been those 3 decades. And that started me on this journey to find other people's DNA stories. I'm one of the lucky ones in this respect because we found somebody who we thought was dead. And a lot of these stories are actually very difficult, and they're marketed as all being positive. Find out who you really are. But what I found is that this can really change people's lives, and it can be quite difficult as they go through this journey.
So when you look into the DNA, I mean, I know quite a number of people, and I'm involved here with the Jewish Genealogical Society of South Africa. And of course, we've been trying to organize tests here, but the experience for most people seems to be very positive in that they did find family, they found extended family, and you, as yourself, they did find cousins and family that they didn't know about or they didn't know were related, and sometimes they found themselves to be Jewish, more Jewish than they thought they were, or less Jewish than they thought they were. But your experience seems to be on the negative or the dark side of this.
Well, my first experience was a positive one. And of course, a lot of people like to talk about the positive ones, but there is actually a really dark underbelly, and a lot of people haven't been sharing their stories. And that's part of the reason that I want to do this series. After we got our first DNA result, my mom got a mysterious message, as I'd already started working on this series, from somebody who said that they were very surprised to be Greek. They had never known they were Greek. And my mom is half Jewish ethnically and half Greek ethnically. Her father was a Greek convert to Judaism. And we were perplexed by this message. And we started looking for pictures of this woman. And eventually I found a picture of her online. And she looked just like my mom, more like my mom than my mom's sister. And lo and behold, we found out that she is my mom's half-sister. Wow. And that her mom had gone to the same synagogue as our family and started an affair with my grandfather. And this was a half-sister who's now 50 years old. My mom hadn't known all these decades. And this was a bit harder for my family. My mom isn't keen to talk about the fact that her father had been unfaithful to my grandmother. And these are a lot of the stories that I'm finding. People who find out that their moms cheated on their fathers and they have a father they didn't know, or in my mom's case, a half-sister that she didn't know about. And the DNA test companies don't ever market this side. They don't want people to think about the negative experience that this might bring. And it's very difficult for people. And in fact, a lot of the people that I'm meeting in this television series that I'm working on no longer speak to their family sometimes. The parents are upset at them for unearthing the secret. They're upset at their parents for having been unfaithful to the other parents. So there is this whole underbelly that's affecting all communities, including the Jewish community.
And in fact, a lot of the research suggests that this new way of doing things is brought on the death of the family secret, that somehow family secrets can no longer hide in the dark. But the interesting part of it is around questions of consent, because when one chooses to take these tests, whose consent does one need to get? It's not only your own history that you're uncovering, but the history of other generations and other family members. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's interesting because so many people don't realize what they're even getting into. Many people think they're just going to find out their ethnic results. Maybe I'm part African. Maybe I'm part Jewish. Maybe I'm part Cherokee Native American. And they don't realize that you're going to open up another section that will then tell you all of the people that you're related to if they've taken that same company's DNA test. So yes, you're consenting when you agree to take this DNA test. You don't have to make your results public, though. They're automatically public. It's only if you choose not to share them that they don't go public. And so I think it's more about educating people that you may get way more than just your health information, which is a big reason that many people take the test. You may get your ethnic information as well, and you may open an entire Pandora's box that will reveal many of your family secrets, from many generations. And I think on the one hand, it's good because it's helping reveal the truth about society, the truth about the lack of monogamy that people are able to commit to in many cases. And so I think it will help make us more honest, but I think people need to know it may not be a positive experience along the way. You may suffer greatly, as so many of the people that I interview have suffered, and it does take them a while that they do come to a peace, but there is a lot of hard work and a lot of emotional upheaval they go through along the way.
So what happens in the process? So I've done my DNA test, and my name is out there, and my family connections are out there. Along comes somebody else who now does the test, and all of a sudden there's a link to a whole nother family, which you didn't even know about, or maybe you did know about it, but it opens this up, and this is a kind of a growing situation where this extended family gets bigger and bigger, and some more things pop up out of the woodwork.
And it's very difficult for a lot of people to accept. There's a story of a family that was published in a newspaper in the United States, a Jewish family who found out that they had a half-black brother. Their father had cheated with an African-American woman. And while two sisters accepted the half-black brother, two of the brothers seemingly haven't accepted him or wanted to make contact with him. So it brings together many questions, not about just who you are or who your family is, but what type of acceptance and what does it really mean to be family? Is being family the people that you were raised with, or is it the people that you share blood with? And I've been very intrigued to watch my mom as she gets to know her half-sister. They have so many things in common. They both complain about their frizzy Greek Jewish hair. They both don't like onions. They're both reading teachers. But at the end of the day, this is just somebody who could have been walking along the street. She's a perfect stranger to my mom in a lot of ways. So it's like siblings getting to know each other when they first come home from the hospital in a way. So there are a lot of deeper questions about who we are as people, and a lot of deeper questions for the Jewish community to figure out if somebody comes and says they have Jewish blood, does that make them Jewish? In whose eyes? In a Reform synagogue's eyes? In Israel's eyes? In an Orthodox? The mother, the father? What makes somebody Jewish really comes into question here and opens up another Pandora's box about how people should be using these for people who might be wanting to make aliyah. And Israel has used these DNA tests in very different and contradictory ways.
How so?
You cannot make aliyah based on a DNA test. Even if I can show that my mother's mtDNA, which is what you would need on the mitochondrial side or the matriarchal side, that will not get you a passport to Israel. But in courts in Israel, people who are showing that they're Jewish through DNA tests and questions of marriage and wanting to get married through the rabbinut officially in Israel, they're starting to accept that. And that has a lot of people in Israel and a lot of Jewish academics worried and ethicists, because of course using DNA tests to figure out if somebody's Jewish really harkens back to the Nazis and eugenics. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of important questions that people have to ask themselves here. What if somebody who's been born Jewish into a Jewish family, raised Jewish all their lives, takes a DNA test and finds out that they actually aren't ethnically Jewish? Are they still Jewish in our community's eyes? And different people have different answers to that. And I think these are things that we're having to grapple with as a Jewish people.
Do you think there'll come a time when it'll be a precondition of marriage to be able to go through a DNA test? There are certain tests, by the way. I mean, I'm sure you're aware that there are certain tests which are done because, and more so because of diseases which are within the Jewish community, in which like Tay-Sachs and et cetera, which, people want to know. So I think from a medical point of view, it's important, but is it going to become run of the mill that you would have to, undergo a DNA test before you get married of this nature?
I think there are so many questions before that we have to grapple with in the Jewish community. And what DNA tests have done, I see, is have exposed a huge lack of knowledge that even we have as Jews, which I think is quite surprising, because we pride ourselves so often in this community about how much we know about our past. And when you get a DNA test, for example, and it says Sephardic on it, well, what does Sephardic mean? In Israel, in modern day Hebrew, Sephardic essentially means anything that isn't Ashkenazi. They call almost everybody Sephardic who isn't Ashkenazi.
So by default, automatically.
But Sefarad means Spain in Hebrew, and it's Sephardic Jews on a DNA test will only be those people like me and my mom whose descendants came from Spain, somebody from Iran, many people from Syria, Jewish people who think of themselves as Sephardic but who have no ties to Spain whatsoever are not going to show up as Sephardic on a DNA test. So this exposes the fact that we as Jewish people don't even really know for sure and have different definitions of what Sephardic means, but a DNA test has a very clear definition of what Sephardic is, a descendant of somebody from Spain. So these types of questions I think we have to grapple with first before we make this leap and decide whether we want this to be a part of the Ketubah, deciding whether that gets signed or not, looking at somebody's DNA. Personally, I'm against that, but I was raised in a Reform synagogue, and I never thought you needed a mother to be Jewish. You could have a Jewish father. So I think each of our perspectives is so different on this, and I think there are many more things we'll have to grapple with before we really get to that. But it could be in the not too distant future.
What makes a DNA Jewish? I mean, how does one differentiate on people, not people? I mean, are there specific genomes or genes that differentiate? It's quite interesting in terms of understanding religion coming into discriminating again in terms of one's sense of identity and physical genealogy.
One of the most fascinating revelations that I've had speaking to genealogists and DNA experts is that it's actually easier to identify a Jewish person's Jewish DNA than it is to identify whether somebody is black or African
How
from
come?
Their DNA.
How come?
Because Jewish people have been such a small group and there's been a much lower rate of intermarriage compared to other groups. Whereas in many places in Africa, you would have people from different tribes, from different regions marrying each other. Jews, as evidenced by our DNA, they can actually trace it back and show where Sephardic Jews were previously related to Ashkenazi Jews before they separated. But because these communities preserve themselves so much by marrying each other, their DNA is actually clearer than it is for other groups, because other groups will be so much bigger, be so much more dispersed than we are. Whereas where we were going throughout the world, yes, for sure there was intermarriage, which will show up in our DNA, but because there was so much less intermarriage, it actually makes our DNA easier to understand. Now, you said something that I want to just circle back to. You talked about, but we're a religious group. This is something that I have to explain to a lot of non-Jews, but even some Jewish groups, and those people will say to me, but how can you tell somebody's religion in their DNA? And I have to explain to people, well, we Jews, most of us, are an ethno-religious group. We're not just like Catholics. Anybody can become a Catholic. They're not all from the same place. We are common people who come from the same place way back in time. And so these are the types of things that you have to convey to people, even to other Jews, to help them understand why people can see our DNA and even the subgroups. You can find Yemenite Jewish DNA, which will be different from Ethiopian Jewish DNA, different from Sephardic DNA, different from Ashkenazi DNA.
Is it conclusive when you have these tests that the result is conclusive in 100%, or are there errors that get thrown up?
There are definitely errors, but most of the DNA companies are giving you a percentage, and the percentage starts to make things very clear. The people that I'm working with, and we can go through some of their incredible stories, will take a DNA test and maybe two or three siblings show up with 98% accuracy, and then somebody who they don't know all of a sudden shows up who's also 98%, with 98% accuracy. The DNA tests say that this is your sibling or your half sibling or your cousin. A lot of people, when they get these surprise DNA, unexpected DNA results, they think the DNA companies have made a test. They'll say a mistake, rather. They'll say, there's no way my mother's not my mother. You must have gotten this wrong. And they'll pay for another DNA test, a different DNA test, from a different company and get that same result over and over again, that their mom is not their mom or their dad is not their dad. So I would say overall, these are very accurate tests. But you do have to keep in mind there can be mistakes, and anything that says you're 5% African or 3% Indian, a lot of the DNA experts say you should just disregard the ones that say you're a small amount of something. These can even change. My mom's DNA test when I first logged in is different from her DNA test now if I log into that same result, because the companies are constantly getting more information and their algorithms will change things. So my mom had actually always heard that on her Greek side, she was had an East Indian relative, a grandparent. And at first that showed up on her DNA test. But today if I log in, it no longer shows up on her DNA test. Is my mom still a little bit East Indian? I think probably, given that the DNA test originally matched the rumors we heard in our family. But I can't say with scientific accuracy or percentage that she and I are still East Indian.
So these tests aren't as easily accessible in South Africa as they are in the US and in the UK. Maybe just for our listeners, you can give us some insight into what this actually entails in terms of how it connects you to a database.
So if you go into a grocery store right now in the United States, as I just did a few weeks ago when I was visiting home, you can pick up your groceries. You can pick up maybe a new electronic item, a new iPad, a new iPod, and you can pick up a DNA test all in the same store. You can get these almost anywhere. You take them, you do a little swab. There's a Q-tip where you'll just put it into your mouth, maybe for 2-3 seconds, rub it around, put it in the tube, and send it off to the DNA company. It will take you about a month or maybe even more to get your results online. They don't usually send them in paper mail. You'll get your results online. And then from there, you can choose if you want to share that information in a database. But anybody else who's taken that DNA test with that company will show up if you're related to them. But it may be that you have a half brother, a half sister, a different father out there that you don't know about. But unless you're using the same DNA test company, you may not get that result. So people like my mom are now considering, should they put their DNA on more than one website? Some companies allow you to take your DNA data and share it with another site. Other companies want you to pay. And it's about $70 US dollars to take the test. Although if you wait for a deal like Amazon Prime Day, you can find out your history for maybe $50. So we always wait in my family to take the next DNA test when there's a sale.
But not Jewish after all.
Hey, if we're going to find out our history, it might as well be for a good price. But I think Jewish people should know that a lot of Jews choose to use Family Tree DNA. I'm not paid by them. I'm not sponsored by them. I'm not doing an advertisement for them. But a lot of Jews choose to use this company, the same reason my family did, because they focus on mtDNA, that's your mitochondrial DNA. That won't tell you your ethnic background. That won't tell you who you're related to. But that will tell you how far back you can trace your matriarchal Jewish line, which is, of course, so important to so many of us because of the halachic laws about your mother being Jewish, your grandmother, etc.
How big is the database about?
There are millions of people in these databases, and they're only growing. So I don't want to give you a number because it literally changes by huge amounts every day. Though Ancestry DNA is the largest DNA company in terms of their database. So my family started out with Family Tree DNA. We were lucky enough to find my missing cousin Jerry, a half-sibling. But we're going to be using Ancestry DNA for our next DNA test because we're curious to see if my mom might have more half siblings out there that she doesn't know about, and just to cast that net a little bit wider. A lot of these companies do send their kits to places like South Africa, like here in the United Kingdom, and then you just have to pay for the additional shipping to get it back to the United States. So really it's the UK and the US that have exploded in DNA tests. So if a Jewish person does them in South Africa right now, I would bet you're going to have a lot more American relatives than you really have. There's a disproportionate amount of Americans showing up on there because of the propensity to take them. But I think more and more we're going to see people all around the world using these tests as so many companies jump on this very lucrative market.
So In South Africa, the Jewish Genealogical Society and the Hebrew Order of David, we would like to maybe explore the possibility of bringing these tests in bulk, and then getting people to come and have the test and sending back the samples, in bulk so that we would save on the postage, because clearly there's a lot to be done. And I think we're going to explore this going down the line. And I think there's another side which I'd like to just touch on. Medically speaking, I know that there are DNA tests or tests which are done which connect people in the, let's say you needed certain type of blood or you needed certain stem cells or so on and so on. This will connect, and somehow you can maybe save lives via this route.
Absolutely. There's so much that these DNA tests can tell you about. And again, whether it's Tay-Sachs in the Ashkenazi community, finding out about that ahead of time, or finding somebody who can help you cure a disease, hopefully, these are the real upsides. But again, people aren't thinking about the dark side. Well, what if your insurance company gets this information? What if your insurance company asks you for your health information? Do you want to share that to get a discount? Or do you want to share that if they later find out, analyzing that same DNA that you gave them, that there's something else in there that would make your health insurance even costlier? So even the things that have undeniable upsides, we have to start considering the other sides of them. And this is where all of my years being a technology journalist at CNN come into play. I watched when people thought Facebook could do no harm. And then you flash forward to the US elections in 2016, where they realized the Russians had figured out a way to connect with pretty much anybody that they wanted through the social network. There is this other side of all of us being connected that can play out in ways that certainly I can't predict, and even the people who create this technology can't foresee at this moment.
So when you come to that dark side that you're referring to, insurance companies, and I mean that could be looming large in down the line, you might get these insurance companies insisting on a DNA test to begin with.
Well, they ask for your other health history right now. If I want to be insured here in the UK by a private insurer, they might go back to my records from my general practitioner. And maybe if I've shared that information, my DNA information, with my general practitioner, he might have an obligation to share that information with a health insurer. So this opens up huge questions that I think will not have a clear answer anytime soon, and people will be motivated to do things for different reasons. If you get a discount, people might be motivated by that. And again, that may play out in different ways that you don't expect down the line.
So through your research, what kind of recommendations have you come up with, or precautions that have been highlighted for you?
I think number one, if you have any suspicions about family secrets, there's a great book by Danny Shapiro, who's a well-known author, had a series of memoirs, and really was incredibly proud of her. The Orthodox family she comes from is quite a predominant Orthodox family, and she discovered in her DNA test that she wasn't related to her father, and she has no genealogical ties with this lauded Orthodox family. So I would stop and think about, did you hear whispers about your mother's affairs? Did you hear that your father was a philanderer? And just stop and think about that and be prepared to see something unexpected in those results. Even if you've never heard some of these rumors, be prepared to expect them, and expect messages from people. Even if you take the DNA test now and nothing comes up that's surprising, it could be that 6 months down the line, your half-sister you don't know about takes the DNA test, and then all of a sudden you get a message that you don't expect. One thing that I would say when you're writing people, if you're reaching out to a new relative, you need to be cautious. My new aunt that I have, she didn't say to us in this message, I know that I'm your half-sister to my mom and to my aunt. She didn't want to spook us or scare us off. So there are all types of guides for writing your half-siblings for the first time and really trying to just build up the relationship slowly. And I think you really have to think long and hard before you want to share this information. For me, I've made a personal decision that I want to share it because I want to find out if there's anybody else that I'm related to. But I certainly would not share that information with a health insurance company. That's my own personal decision. But of course, there are data questions, just like Facebook had data that was shared with other groups, Cambridge Analytica, for instance. Mm-hmm. Some of these DNA test companies have had data issues of their own, and FamilyTree DNA, the company that I mentioned earlier that focuses on mtDNA, that matriarchal DNA, they've had data issues to the point that some DNA bloggers don't recommend using this company anymore. So just because information is supposedly kept safe doesn't mean that it always will be.
So you could have an uh-oh moment instead of an aha moment.
Exactly.
So, okay, coming to the uh-oh moment. So you're talking about the darker side. So can you give us some examples of uh-oh moments in DNA technology and your experience in researching this? Or is that something that's going to come out in the TV series, or are you happy to share it now?
Well, it will come out in the TV series, but I'll give you a little flavor for some of the incredible stories. And I think it's important that we stop and not just treat these stories as sensational headlines, because they really are sensational stories. But behind them are people who are really suffering as they find out some of these results. For instance, in my research investigating this for my series, I came across a man who always knew his adoptive parents had told him that he was given up, that he was adopted, and he knew that he was Mexican, and he was searching for his birth family for years. And when he eventually took a DNA test, kind of as a last chance, not thinking that a poor family in Mexico who gave a child up for adoption would have the expendable income to have paid for a DNA test and be looking for him, he takes the DNA test and he finds his family, but it unearthed a real tragedy that he had not been given up for adoption by his parents. He had actually been kidnapped from his parents, and they had been looking for him all these years and only now found him through this DNA test. I think this is an incredibly hard situation for him to be in, for his adoptive parents to be in. Certainly they had believed all their lives that, you know, they had really done a mitzvah by adopting this boy from a family who had given him up for adoption, and to know that he was taken from his parents, and for him to know that his parents had wanted him all these years, was a really, really difficult struggle to go through. And I think these types of stories make you realize that technology can impact our lives. The advent of the DNA test, the commercialization of a DNA test can impact your emotional being, your emotional well-being, in ways that you never thought a little swab in your cheek could do.
So if you look at Europe, and I'm sure that after the war, there were many people in places like Poland, and those Eastern Bloc countries where there were deniers of the fact that they were Jewish because of circumstances, and then they've gone along a course. Some of them have actually chosen Judaism as a path unknowingly or unwittingly, and have found out later that in fact their parents were Jewish, or and vice versa, where they thought they weren't, they were Jewish, and maybe they weren't at the end of the day. But I've heard many stories. In fact, we had a visitor a year or two ago where she came from Poland. She had gone to Israel, just wanted to go to Israel to find out all about it. And when she got back, when her mother was passing away, she told her that she was in fact Jewish. In the meantime, this girl had converted and become Jewish on her own. So I'm sure that that is something which this is going to start to throw up.
There are incredible stories, and many more than I think people would imagine, of Jewish people who are converts to Judaism finding out via these DNA tests that they are ethnically Jewish. Just a short time ago, I interviewed a man who had converted to Judaism. He really took to the faith, and it was interesting because a friend's mom said when she met him, and I think she's someone who maybe wouldn't be so keen on intermarriage or maybe question somebody converting to Judaism for marriage. And she said, that boy has a Jewish neshama. And she told me this before the DNA test. It really stuck out to me as kind of an odd comment. And later on, he took the DNA test and didn't just find out that he was a little bit ethnically Jewish, that he was 50% ethnically Jewish. So there are so many stories, even me being from Arizona, which is so close to Mexico, people who've converted to Judaism, people who are ethnically Mexican, converting to Judaism and finding out that on their Mexican side that there were Sephardic Jews. Of course, some Sephardic Jews escaped the Inquisition in Spain, went to what's now modern-day Mexico City. The Inquisition caught up there, and so they went north toward what we would know as northern Mexico, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. And some people in these places, of course, still have some customs left over. They light candles on Friday nights, not knowing that this has anything to do with Judaism because this is what their Catholic grandparents did. So some of these people finding out that they have Sephardic blood, these stories are now becoming very common in the Jewish community. And just last week, there was a major new study revealed about Ashkenazi Jews in Hungary. They went through and looked at people who don't know that they're Jewish in Hungary and found a massive amount of Ashkenazi descendants there in Hungary. And I think the most remarkable story of all these anecdotes was a man who was born and raised Catholic, had never heard anything about any Jewish relatives whatsoever. And his DNA test revealed that he was 100%, 100% Jewish, 98% Ashkenazi, 2% Sephardic. So you can imagine his surprise, this man in Budapest, all of a sudden finding out very late in life, he's an elderly man now, that he is 100% a descendant of Jews.
I'd actually spent some time recently in Poland, and we had met with the chief rabbi of Poland, and he said that he's had an increasing number of young people that are now rediscovering their Jewish roots, that to some extent the way they had been saved was through Catholic organizations or through people taking them in, and so many of them had no idea about their Jewish ancestry. And I guess it's the same kind of idea, that kind of finding new roots.
So we're talking to Samuel Burke, an Emmy award-winning bilingual business and technology journalist, in case you tuned in a little late. And Samuel is researching and developing a TV series and a book on how unexpected DNA tests may be rewriting people's lives. And in the studio with me, I have Natalie Solomon, who's a clinical psychologist with a remedial school. And we're chatting about the dark side, if there is such a very dark side, but it seems that it's throwing up a lot of information about the Jewishness, the history of people, their ancestry. And, so this is the Hebrew Order of David Hour. And, it's very interesting from the Hebrew Order of David, because one of our criteria for joining the Hebrew Order of David is that if you're married, you should be married in the Jewish faith. And if you're unmarried, you undertake that if you do get married, you would marry in the Jewish faith, or marry a Jewess, in other words, and under the penalty of leaving the organization if you don't comply with that particular rule. So, you know, these things are, we don't obviously ask any of our members to produce a DNA test, but down the line, this may be something which will throw up interesting things as we go. So we stand against assimilation, but history tells us that there's a lot going on that we don't know about.
And when it comes to assimilation, it's such an interesting word, because if you look, for example, at the Jews from Northern Africa, it's very rare to find somebody who has 100% Sephardic blood. Again, these would be Jews who left Spain and then either went to Portugal or straight to North Africa, countries like Tunisia, Algeria. With those DNA tests, I have yet to see a single person who's 100% Sephardic. Quite to the contrary, usually those Jews, you see an incredible amount of mixing with what appears to be the local populations in North Africa. So even people who think, well, I have two Jewish parents, I'm 100% Jewish, well, what does 100% Jewish mean? Does that mean your faith? Does that mean halachically? Does that mean DNA? Because certainly if you look at Jews, Jews tend to start looking like the places where they are. Ashkenazi Jews might look more Eastern European, you know, Iranian Jews, Persian Jews tend to look very Iranian. And so I think we have to start asking ourselves questions about who we are, where we come from. And certainly if people have problems being monogamous now, they might have had problems being monogamous in the past. And I think it is a time for Jewish people to reflect on all these things, including where we come from and what we were doing in the local populations in those places.
So in South Africa, the vast majority of Jews came from Lithuania. I mean, obviously not all of them, because there are others that came via other routes, but the vast majority of them, of South African Jews, have Lithuanian ancestry. And so, and we're pretty well, a small community. So, you know, the connections are pretty straightforward, I think, in most cases, but I'm sure slowly, little snippets of stuff seem to be coming out.
Certainly Jewish people aren't immune to any of the things that happen to the larger communities in our world. But to your point about this connection that we all believe that we share, a study was done looking at Jews in New York, and they found that most Jews in New York were somewhere along the order of fourth to fifth cousins, which would make them 10 times more likely to be fourth or fifth cousins than the average Gentile who they tested in the streets of New York. So certainly there is a closeness. I don't think that any of us would be surprised to find maintaining our heritage, our customs, and marrying other Jewish people certainly has changed our DNA and our close connections with so many other Jewish people.
It certainly brings to the fore questions around identity. What constitutes identity? In terms of is DNA identity, or is it, kind of what one practices?
And I think this book by Danny Shapiro called Inheritance, which even if you're not obsessed by DNA the way that I am, is just a beautiful memoir exploring that, finding out that her father wasn't Jewish. Of course, halachically, she is still Jewish because her mother is Jewish. But she had always been plagued by these questions of people saying, you don't look Jewish. Well, what does you don't look Jewish mean exactly? And should we really be saying that so loosely to people in our community? And it really does explore what it means to look Jewish or not look Jewish. And I think these same questions are being asked of lots of communities. There was a man who was very prominent in the African-American community in the United States, had done so much charity work and scholarships for Black organizations, who took the DNA test and found out that he had no ancestral link to Africa whatsoever. He had links to other countries with people with dark skin, and places with dark skin, rather. I believe you're talking about East Asia, for example, South Asia, rather. But he found out that he wasn't Black. But if you've grown up your whole life thinking that you're African-American and now suddenly a DNA test tells you otherwise, are you not African-American anymore? Does your experience change? And the same thing for Jewish people who've been born and raised believing they are ethnically Jewish, who take a DNA test and find out that they're not Jewish at all, or maybe their mother wasn't Jewish, or maybe they're much less Jewish than they expected.
How far back do these tests go? I mean, how many generations? Does it go all the way back to Abraham, or is it somewhere in between, or?
Well, it goes back at least to 1492 when we're looking at Sephardic Jews. We know that's when they left Spain, so it's going back farther than that. They do go back hundreds and thousands of years. But, of course, they're just looking at your mom's mom's mom and your dad's dad's dad. There are a lot more people in your family, and just because you're 100% Jewish now doesn't mean that people before you weren't Jewish. You know, if I marry somebody who's not Jewish and we have a kid, but then that kid marry somebody who's Jewish and their kid marry someone who's Jewish, eventually you'll have a DNA test that says 100% Jewish, even though back along the line there may have been somebody who wasn't Jewish. So yes, they go hundreds and hundreds of years back, but that doesn't also give you the full picture either.
So you can't really work out your full genealogical map by going into this. This is a growing situation. So what's true today is going to change as more people get added to the list and the database. Your percentage might even change.
Exactly. And I think eventually we'll have a big enough family tree to see that all of us Jews are related, who are all related to all these Gentiles, and everybody will be related to each other as we know we all are as a human race. Just one day we'll have a gigantic family tree online somewhere that can prove all of that.
So there's an organization in Cape Town called the Kaplan Center, and they have instituted a lot of research. One of the things that they're doing at the moment is trying to build a database, a photographic database of all the people in South Africa and connect the dots. I think it's an ambitious project, and I'm sure it's very in its, you know, in its infancy. So I think things are moving along
although,
in that way.
I would just say, because I'm thinking about this so often, what would you do if the government knocked on your door and said, we want access to that database? Or what would you do if an anti-Semitic government or a racist regime took over your country unexpectedly, as we know happened in our people's history more than once, and all of a sudden wanted these databases the same way that the Germans came knocking for people's databases, that time not online, of course, on paper, in communities from Germany all across the places that they occupied?
So it sounds like you've opened up a little bit of a can of worms here in this research. I can't wait to see this TV series and where it's going.
Yeah,
and will it ever be finished? In that, I mean, because no, of the growing numbers of data.
These are constantly changing stories. And again, the more people you get, the more these DNA tests change. The DNA tests also look at the people who are sending them in, and that gives them a better understanding. So the more we take these, the more our DNA will change. Think about that. Your DNA will change in the scientific sense, not physically what you carry in your body, but our understanding of it changes every single day with these companies.
What happens with a blood transfusion and you get blood from somewhere else? Could that change the dynamic?
As far as I know, I'm not a geneticist, I'm not a medical expert, but as far as I know and what I've seen with my research, that definitely should not change your DNA.
You mean you can't get blood from someone else and suddenly find out that you've been converted?
No, I don't think if I give you a blood transplant that a rabbi is going to accept all of a sudden that you're Jewish from all of my mom's grandmother's great-grandmother's DNA.
It would save a lot of trouble if you could just take a pill or infusion.
Cheaper.
Samuel Burke, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. Can you give us one last word beside what you're up to, what you're doing, and what the future holds for you?
Yeah, this is going to be my main focus. We're working on a TV series, possibly a podcast and a book looking at this. But of course, I want to get back into the daily news grind eventually. I'm having a rest from it after 10 years at CNN, but want to get back there. And if anybody has any questions or they want to share their story, so many of the people that I'm meeting want to pull back the stigma. They're tired of being embarrassed about the affair that their mother had, and they want to share this with other people. They can join Facebook groups like the NPE, Not Parent Expected support group on Facebook. Or if you want to share your story as part of getting rid of this stigma, you can contact me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just search Samuel Burke or Samuel CNN, my Instagram handle. They still haven't allowed me to change it yet. And feel free to reach out to me with your story, or if you need help, there are a lot of what they call search angels. People are helping other people with these unexpected results. Try to make sense of them, because sometimes they're incredibly complicated. So a lot of amateur sleuths out there helping people understand what these DNA results mean.
And Samuel, it's been an absolute pleasure, a fascinating insight into stuff that really I'm sure most people haven't even considered. And maybe it's going to put them off taking the DNA test, but I hope not, because I think probably in the main, you're probably going to get positive results, and it's going to close a lot of gaps in your genealogical experience. And like to invite you back at some other point once the series is ongoing and we're getting other results, and talk about it some more. So thank you once again.
Thank you.
And thank you, Natalie, for being with me in the studio. I'm going to sign off with Samuel and just give a few little snippets of information about the Hebrew Order of David and what we're up to. And thank you.
Thank you.
So this weekend, not this weekend, I beg your pardon, on the in September, early in September, the 8th of September, the Hebrew Order of David is hosting a bowls morning in honor of the late Harvey Berlin from Benoni. And if you want to join, it starts on the 8th of September at 9 a.m. in Killarney Bowling Club. And I don't know what the charges are, but there are extensive prizes. And it's run by the Sir Harry Groman Lodge. If you want to get in touch with anyone, you can phone 082-961-7478 and speak to Gershon Stein, who's managing this particular project. We have a sponsor for this particular segment of the Hebrew Order of David, and it's Garden Quip. And the Garden Quip of the week is that is a comparison between Chai FM and Garden Quip, because they both give you live streaming, the one with water and the one with news. And so if you want to contact anything to do with water irrigation, and it's time to fix your sprinkler system, upgrade it, repair it, and get new installations, phone Garden Quip on 082-857-3107. If you want to contact the Hebrew Order of David on 011-640-3017. And we are in the process of forming a new lodge in Johannesburg. Already there are a number of people who have come forward and want to join this young man's lodge, get involved with the Hebrew Order of David, and having listened to your genealogy, do something Jewish. And I wish you a good Shabbos and a good night, and thank you to DJ Flo, who's been the controller, and to Natalie Solomon for arranging this, and for, of course, for our guest Samuel Burke, and good night.